Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have a very prominent Jewish leader. We have Dov Zakheim, and he has a long, long bio, and we have a short program. So let me just say that Dr. Rabbi Dov Zakheim was both a member of the administration of the Reagan administration and the George W. Bush administration in Undersecretary of Defense, was a senior vice president of Booz Allen, very, very well known in the Jewish community, and, of course, to us, of course, very important that he belongs to an OU synagogue. So, Dov, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Well, that's really great. Thank you for coming on the program. I appreciate it. And what I really want to talk to you about for the few moments that we have is the letter that was sent out very recently, actually April 3rd, 2013, of which you were one of the signatures. And the letter was sent to the Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, asking him to make what they call painful territorial sacrifices for the sake of peace. And many people in the Jewish community have spoken about that. We have some other comments. I wanted to understand the rationale why you decided to be one of the people who were signing that, and what are you hoping it's going to accomplish?
Well, I signed it for a number of reasons. The first is American national security. There's no doubt in my mind, most of the people in my world, the national security world, believe this, that Israel's inability to at least be seen to be reaching out to the Palestinians, whether there's an agreement or not, let's hold off on that, but to be seen to be reaching out has an impact on our relations with everybody else in the Arab world. It's just a reality. It doesn't dominate, but it's a fact. So that's number one. Number two is that this administration in particular, Israel needs, for other reasons, Iran first, Syria second, Egypt third, then maybe Jordan. When you look at it in that context, if President Obama really wants this deal so badly, it seems that is to say a Palestinian arrangement, it seems that it would be in Israel's interest to at least to be seen to be trying to reach out, even if it doesn't succeed. And frankly, there's a case to be made that it won't succeed simply because it's not clear the Palestinians want it to succeed. So it's in Israel's interest, both, I think, because of this particular administration's concerns and in Israel's own priorities, and because it doesn't hurt that it should reach out. And one other point, what's a painful concession? I think to Mr. Netanyahu, 1 inch could be a painful concession. We didn't specify in the letter what the painful concession should be, and I'm not sure I would have signed a letter that specified it. In fact, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have. So any deal would involve a painful concession. I think this letter was really misrepresented. In fact, critics even said these were self-styled leaders. The letter doesn't say that anybody's a leader. Nobody called himself a leader. It was a straw man. First you say that they call themselves leaders, and then you say they're not leaders and don't speak for anybody. Kind of interesting.
Okay, but I mean, if you look at the names of the people who are on the list, many of them are pretty well known in the Jewish world, and certainly,
that may be so, but that's very different from calling yourself a leader and saying you're speaking as a leader. That's a very, very different thing. Had people done that, I think then they would have been subject to criticism. How dare you do that?
Okay. So let's go on beyond that point. So when you say that you say for Bibi Netanyahu, any sacrifice at all of territory is painful, even 1 inch.
I think that's the case. I think that's the case. And I think he's pretty much said that. He said he supports a two-state solution, but he's pretty much said this is going to be painful. After all, look where he's coming from. Look at where Likud has come from. Do you think it was easy for Likud and Beitar, which is really the progenitor of Likud, to turn around and essentially ditch the entire Jabotinsky vision and say we'll live with two states? Do you think that was easy?
What about the history of the painful concessions that Israel did make and what happened because of that? And I mean, many people say, well, they made a terrible mistake when they gave back Gush Katif, and what happened? It was overrun by Hamas, and today they don't have any peace at all.
Well, because those weren't concessions. Israel made two unilateral decisions. One was to get out of Lebanon. One was to get out of Gaza. These were not decisions made by negotiation. There was no guarantee of a demilitarized Gaza. There was no guarantee of a demilitarized southern Lebanon in the way that a negotiation would have led to one. There was no peace treaty. There was no nothing. It was a decision, and certainly Gaza was a decision by Ariel Sharon to unilaterally pull out. I don't think that Israel would unilaterally pull out of the West Bank, and I don't think that any agreement would allow for a provision whereby the Palestinians would have the kind of access to rockets and missiles that Gaza does. You can't compare a unilateral decision, which essentially says whatever happens to the other side happens on the other side, to a peace agreement, which may be one of the reasons why the Palestinians aren't ready for a peace agreement.
But the thing is that in the letter, and I don't want to get, you know, look, I know how these letters are put together because I've been involved in
all
the letters.
No, by all means, go ahead.
But,
go ahead,
you know, please. Normally they're very well crafted and well designed,
yeah.
And you know, look, words are important. So when you talk about the Palestinians on the Palestinian side, which all you're asking them to do is just return to the negotiating table, whereas on the Israeli side, you're saying, well, make painful concessions first, and then hopefully by making the painful concessions, then they'll return to the negotiating table.
No, not at all. That's not how I read the letter. First of all, it says tells the Palestinians you should return to the negotiating table without preconditions. So by definition, there are no concessions before they come back. What it says is that Mr. Netanyahu should be prepared to make painful concessions. But as I read it, by saying no preconditions, what was the Palestinian precondition? The precondition was no new settlements. The letter doesn't say that. The letter says give up your preconditions, which means stop hassling about the settlements. Now, there's a totally different argument as to whether settlements should continue to be built or not be built, where they should be built or not built. That's a whole different argument. But by saying that the Palestinians should come back without preconditions, it means just that. There are no conditions. There is no saying, oh, give up territory first. There is no saying, stop building settlements first, or even buildings or bedrooms in the settlements or towns,
well,
whatever you want to call
them.
When
you read the letter, I mean, it seems to say, it says, you know, that Israel, you know, what does Israel have to do? You should, you know, show the world, show the Palestinians that you're serious. In order to do that, you should make painful territorial sacrifices for the sake of peace. Whereas when you talk about the Palestinians, you're saying what they really have to do is have some constructive steps, kind of nebulous in a way, but most importantly, a prompt return to the negotiating table. And Netanyahu has already said he's willing to come to the negotiating table, no preconditions. He said that publicly, privately. So
yeah,
hasn't he really done that already?
The issue isn't with Netanyahu's preconditions. The issue is with the Palestinians' preconditions. And the letter says, bluntly, no preconditions. The letter does not say, make concessions before the Palestinians come to the table. The letter says, be prepared to make concessions. That is very different. To be prepared to make concessions is very, very different. And so I repeat, if you read the letter, if you don't interpret the letter, but just read what it says, what that letter says is Palestinians should return without preconditions. Now, I know there are a lot of people in our community who really don't like the letter because they don't like the idea of anything done with the Palestinians. People can differ on that, but that's not what the letter says.
Okay. I mean, look, there's no question that, you know, I think most people would agree negotiations are fine, hopefully, if they're productive. But, people question whether productive. Let me ask you this question. I mean, Abbas, does he really have the ability to make concessions, to do what has to be done in order to get a peace treaty done?
I honestly don't know. But I don't think the question can be answered until he's probed. And that's why it seems to me that, Kerry is trying to get everybody to sit down and make a deal. If Israel announces its willingness to negotiate, which it has, and to explore a deal, and reaches some kind of understanding and then Abu Mazen doesn't have the ability to deliver, well, that's Abu Mazen's problem. It's just like the problem at Camp David. It's, you know, the offers have been made. If the, you know, if the Palestinians can't pick up on an offer, that's not Israel's problem. But clearly, there has to be a clear signal that Israel is willing to deal. And that does involve a willingness to contemplate concessions. What those concessions are, you know, different folks have different opinions about that. And how painful are they? I think everybody agrees they're going to be painful.
Well, everyone knows that any concessions will be painful. There's no question about that. Why the need to do this publicly? I mean, why not privately, dealing with Netanyahu, the democratically elected prime minister of Israel? What's the reason for doing it publicly?
Oh, very simple. I think American Jews have a stake in this. Frankly, we provide, we as taxpayers provide support for Israel. We as Jews provide support for Israel. And so there's no, and Israel comes to the American Jewish community when it needs help. And when it needs help, whether it's directly with the Hill for Things for Israel, whether it needs help for blocking sales to third countries, there's no reluctance on the part of Israel to come to American Jewry. Well, if that's the case, then American Jewry certainly can say, hey, look, our government wants to move ahead with this, help them out. Again, I think I personally, you know, I can't speak for other people who signed the letter, but I personally would not sign a letter that would say give up area A or B or C or X or Y or Z or do this policy and not that policy. That's micromanaging, as far as I'm concerned, the decisions of another country. But to encourage them to support our policy because it's in our mutual interest, I think that's perfectly fine for the American Jewish community to say.
Okay, you think that...
And, oh, by the way, let me make one other point.
Go ahead.
The very critics of this letter have shown no hesitation in the past to criticize Israel when it was prepared to make a deal, criticized Ehud Barak, bitterly criticized Yitzhak Rabin, to the point where some people may have gone over the line in their criticism of Rabin. So, you know, what's sauce to the goose is sauce to the gander.
Now, I read an article where Zev Elkin, who was deputy foreign minister and from the Likud, obviously was rather upset with this, and... said that, you know, this is an Israeli issue that has to be dealt with, and pressure from overseas should not guide the prime minister in his careful management of the diplomatic process. What do you think about that?
Well, two things. First, it's clearly not guiding the prime minister in his careful management of the diplomatic process because it didn't tell him what to do. It didn't tell him what to give up. It didn't tell him what not to give up. And Mr. Elkin, with all due respect, apparently supports a one-state solution. And the policy of this country is a two-state solution.
Well, I mean, you're saying you didn't tell him what to do. I mean, you said a prompt return to the negotiating table, which he has said himself. I mean, Bibi Netanyahu has said that publicly many times. He's prepared to go back to the negotiating table, no preconditions. So, you know, what do you accomplish by doing this publicly and putting even additional pressure? I mean, you have to believe that the Israeli...
Well, why not? Look, the upside is this. You're articulating a position that many American Jews strongly hold, and at a minimum, voicing support for this administration's policy. Now, I worked against this president being elected president, but I very strongly believe that our policy toward Israel should be bipartisan. I don't think Israel should be a partisan issue, and I think those who make it a partisan issue are doing Israel no favors. And it is bipartisan American policy to support a two-state solution. And so for the deputy foreign minister who supports a one-state solution, naturally he's going to criticize those who support a two-state solution, but he doesn't have the guts to take on the American government, so he takes on a bunch of American Jews.
Well, I mean, you know, he's reacting to the letter, I guess, you know, and that's more than anything. He's just reacting to the letter. So if you had to do it again, they came to you all over again, you'd sign the letter again, I presume, right?
Absolutely, unless it had the kinds of details that I think are inappropriate for anybody other than the Israeli security establishment to deal with. I don't like any other country telling us how to negotiate the details of anything we negotiate. So why should we tell Israel the details? But to urge that this be taken up promptly, well, I think it's important. And frankly, the very fact that the deputy foreign minister of Israel has a problem with something as anodyne as this letter tells me that there isn't, at least throughout the Israeli government, an urge to come back to the negotiating table. If there was a real urge, he wouldn't have said what he had said.
Look, I think the reluctance is, you know, and you know this, of course, is that you need two to tango. And at this point, Israel doesn't really feel there's either a peace partner who is willing or able to make a deal. And if you don't have a partner willing to make a deal, what's the point of negotiating? And yet, Bibi Netanyahu has said he's still willing to come back to the table.
So by definition, he does see a point of negotiating.
Right.
And that's all we're urging. You can't have it both ways.
He felt that way before the letter was written. I mean, you know, without the letter being written,
he said this.
I mean, if he never said it, see, I would understand it if he never said it. And the idea was to get him to really focus on getting back to the negotiating table. And he's already said he's in favor of a two-state solution. So what the purpose of the letter, then, I don't quite understand what the purpose is when he's already said that he would do it.
I'll repeat again. A, it's not clear that the entire government supports him on this, number one, and that's clear from his own deputy foreign minister, whom you've quoted. B, if the prime minister is perfectly comfortable, then he actually should have thanked us for the letter, because we're voicing support for what he wants to do anyway. So there's no harm in providing support, and if people do see harm in this letter, then they see harm for a very different reason. They see harm because the truth of the matter is there are an awful lot of people, particularly in the Orthodox community, that are terrified about any concession. And therefore, they come out against a letter like this. Because any letter would be annoying, other than a letter that says, don't give up an inch.
Okay. Do you think, one last question. Do you think the word compromise is in the vernacular of the Palestinians? Do they have the ability? Have they ever said that they're willing to make any, painful sacrifices? What would be a painful sacrifice that they would have to make in order to show the world that they're serious about peace?
Oh, there are lots of painful sacrifices they
could
make.
Like what?
Let's start with the whole refugee issue. If they were prepared to say that Palestinian refugees will accept money instead of claiming territory inside the Green Line or inside whatever is agreed to as the formal boundaries of the state of Israel, I think for them that would be a painful concession, big time.
Okay.
So there you are, right there.
Have they ever said that?
No, and that's the whole point. That's the whole point. That's what negotiations are about. That's what compromises are about. And as I said at the outset of this, since this seems to be a priority for the administration, and since if you're absolutely right that the Palestinians aren't going to really come through, then what harm is there when clearly resisting the administration will hurt Israel in other ways, because Israel needs the United States to back it up on Iran, to back it up on Syria, and to back it up on Egypt. And to my mind, at least, right now, those three are far more serious security issues than the Palestinians.
Terrific. Dov, I really appreciate your coming on the program. Thank you so much. And
my pleasure. Have a good Shabbos.
Have a wonderful Shabbos. Be well. Bye-bye.
All the best. Kol tov.